let's get back underway in reading vein. Just for some questions, if I may. I want to take you first to Rebecca Holden's report, the 42A principle report. And at paragraph 16 through to 620, she discussed the height and the setback issue. It's not a lengthy consideration, but she arrives at a different outcome than yourself and to your submissions. And I just wondered if you wanted to add anything further to what you've already told me about that issue.
No, the only thing I was saying there is, again, there's no acknowledgement of the separate activity status and assessment as it applies to the zoning. It's comparing heights in terms of the meter number and nothing else. So it's enough. I don't want to repeat what we said.
So maybe you'd like to think about that particular point when we come to you to your report. Also, paragraph 6.8 of the same report, Ms. Holden there makes reference to McElroy, and the final sentence, this acknowledgement supports the widening of the airport-related activities for McElroy Airport. So I guess you'd say that that's fine so far as it goes with the broad statement, but what's missing is an assessment in relation to effects of those broadening of the activities that you say that are necessary here.
Completely right. That does support what the airport has in the other, but yes, there's no sense of effects, all very low.
Yeah.
All
right. Now, turning to your synopsis, that's where I've scribbled my notes. And alongside your paragraphs, the one here is designation 2.1, and I'll take you all the way through to it's page 6.
Yes.
And I'm kind of at your sub paragraph E and your paragraph 2.2.
Yes.
Now, Mr. Bolt's kind of counter submission seems to lie at about paragraph 1.2.4 and 1.2.6 of her submission.
1.2.4 was it said?
Yeah, 1.2.4 and say 1.2.6.
I could perhaps cut. I would accept that the submission on plan change 34 doesn't assist your assessment of effects. The reason for identifying that, I felt obliged to, was that the heights now relied on were opposed at the time they were proposed. And I'm asking the question why. But in reality, I don't think that it's a great deal to assist the human being there. So I understand that. The response, and ultimately that was resolved through Plan Change 34, and as Ms. Walk, I think, states, agreed resolution. I wouldn't say it's no relevance, certainly, but I would say it's probably a little relevant for this historic. It's an airport like anyone without a chain of mine, so it's really background information.
And you discussed the image issue. And then, standing on to Ms. Holden does the same, but she notes that, really as I read the report, that some further help from the airport company would be required to sort of unravel that issue. And I think that's about where you've got to as well. Your paragraph 3.2, I've scribbled along the side, 3.3. Ms. Walt's submission 140 to 158, in particular paragraph 158.
Yes, in terms of the bit.
Just to sort of see really if you had any.
I missed my designations there, so I'm talking about your edge.
Yeah.
And then I'd say lot 6 in the first of designation 2 is similar. I expect that lot split and the purpose of designation four, or the objective are different. I think that makes sense. So is it 144?
Yeah, right through, I've tagged 140 right through to 158.
Yes, so I suggest that. I know this, but it's right, and I had him at most of it, that version here, so I'm working on the electronic version. Well, the statement's correct, but I think what Ms. Voss saying is you refer to designation 2, the purpose of designation 4 is different, I accept that. But what... Yes, I accept that that has a different purpose, but I don't think it detracts from the point of the related, more the essential kind of the inner edge and the surfaces are linked. But I accept her submission on that. I mean, I had some difficulty extracting what the objective of this inquiry was, because, and I was trying to work through what is the work, what are we trying to do here, and I aligned lot 6 with operational capabilities. When I came to the designation 2 amendment, the purpose is still to enable operational capabilities, but I understand the objective of the work, the public work, is to meet the statement of intent objectives. And so that's probably would explain why that's not as clear as it could be, because I've had some difficulty finding what the objective was.
Okay. Well, in particular, SEO 140, as well, submits that the release tool by an RPA was unclear, that it does not relate to or arise from the modification sought.
Well, that's where we disagree, because Ms. Voss says that there isn't a relationship, as I understand, between Striplet and the services, and I say, well, I'm not sure about that, it seems that there is.
Right.
If she convinces you, 140 stands, if they're unrelated, but if they aren't,
and finally, I've marked 158 of Ms. Walt's submission, and we've partly already been through that, but this is where she contends a good part of your submissions are of no relevance. They relate to an environment court setting, but definitely no way, different objective, rely on findings.
The reason that the QAT was successful in their appeal in arguing that they interpreted the civil aviation table incorrectly for a separation distance, and I've done that wrong, I should be able to go back and say it's actually greater. I'm happy to be proven wrong. I don't believe the High Court ever said that the Environment Court was wrong to reject that a 300-metre strip width had no nexus to the object of the NOR. I don't believe that was even contested. Runway strips were before the link to the A for the High Court, because the issue was separation distances for a code G jet rather than code C and matters like that. But that could be proven wrong, but I don't believe that particular issue has been disturbed as I understand it. As lots of proceedings carry on, we're not looking at a 300-metre strip width. That's a fine that's been accepted. Cozy aircraft is the aircraft of the purpose of that NOR. And I didn't find any statement on the decision of Potter J I will accept my reflection that the designation for a resubmission group, not as helpful as it could be, and I hope I'll clarify today. The other point I was trying to make, having spoken to my clients, is we are still don't know, we knew the Auckland was wrong, we knew there was a disconnect back in the lot 6 proceedings, and there was a debate about that back then, so I went back to that. I still don't know if the words are wrong or the plans are wrong. And no one actually said to me, here's the planning background. It was always 150 metres from the edge, and that those words have always been wrong. That's we'll pick the greater distance. Because that's me. But we're picking one, not sort of establishing one's wrong. So that's really a problem.
Okay. Now, in terms of overall outcome, you've accept your submission is in the absence of evidence, the modification should be rejected. And you've made the point about sort of oral evidence and matters of that sort, that you think that if there are issues that require being sort of cured, if you like, if I receive oral evidence, that won't be enough.
I have said that, but that's a decision for you to and I accept that. I more would say, but I urge you to exercise care about that, because the assessment of effect from the NOR is only just over a page. Mr. Kyle largely adopts that in the evidence, and I've identified shortcomings by the evidence. And I fail to see, if I'm likely to accept my position, I fail to see how you can ever cure some of those defects and other evidence. So it's more that they exercise caution. But that's your task. It's difficult for you to think to you, because I understand your freedom to accept whatever evidence you think compelling, logical, and coherent may come to you.
All right, okay, thank you very much indeed, that's been helpful.
Thank you, sir.
Right, so now we're going to interpose Mr. Duran. Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, I'm Jillian McCall and I'm back for getting our late submission. I've got the time to confuse. And I'm a friend of David and Tullock Architects, and he has asked me if he's in the ultimate moment to present the submission on his behalf. And he has written something for me to read out, which is Jillian McCall is presenting a verbal submission on behalf of David Durham, Biggest Architect, fellow of the New Zealand Institute of Architects, David is a trustee for the owner of 96 McBride Street, Paynton. This submission relates in particular to the airport noise mitigation conditions. Airport noise mitigation conditions within these designations that mechanical ventilation shall be in accordance with Table 2 of Appendix 13 to the 16. However, this table has no reference for the need for cooling. The only reference is the requirement for heating. Therefore, and Dave has experience with this, there is no requirement in the RMP for either new or existing houses within the airport noise boundary to be provided with cooling. Cooling will be a necessity to allow houses to operate with windows and doors shut in the summer months within the airport noise boundary. This is because Queenstown has high summer temperatures and in fact in the majority of houses face directly wet and have large windows for the view. This causes late afternoon overheating with a very low summer sun coming through their window. Property owners can make their houses livable by opening windows. Opening the windows has two significant effects. One, it allows a high volume of air through the house. This does not reduce the interior temperature relative to the outside air, but it does remove the additional heat load caused by the low afternoon sun. Therefore, the air temperature does not rise further. Two, this large-scale air movement also has a beneficial effect of cooling the body, like a windchill effect. Without the ability to open the windows, the temperature in the house will rise significantly and there will be insufficient air movement to provide a cooling effect on the body. Blinds do not reduce the temperature rise because once the sun is through the glass, it converts to long-wave radiation and remains trapped inside. Under such constraints, the house will quickly become unlivable and experiment in one McBride Street house, I suspect it's 96, found the temperature rose to 39 degrees on a summer afternoon with doors and windows shut. To have the same effect as being able to open windows, cooling by way of a heat pump is required. A heat pump has to have the capacity to cool sufficiently to remove the heat chain from the sun through the windows and also be able to replicate the cooling effect at moderate breeze. Since the airflow a heat pump produces is minor in comparison to a breeze from open windows, it must cool the air to a much lower temperature to have a similar effect. The combination of these effects means that the cooling capacity required for a heat pump is quite large. during the hearing that in the report from permission for plan change 35 was clearly stated that houses within the airport noise boundaries will need to operate with their windows and doors closed in order to mitigate the airport noise issue. Unless houses can operate with windows and doors shut, the noise from the airport cannot be controlled or mitigated. As a means of mitigation proposed under Plan Change 35, QAD proposed to provide ventilation systems for existing houses within the airport noise boundary, either fully or at 75% subset depending on house location. And Plan Change 35 references Table 2 as a means of compliance. However, because there is no requirement for cooling in any table nor any performance requirement, QAD feels no obligation to provide systems that are designed to maintain houses at livable temperatures. This is 18 to 20 degrees in the summer. While some cooling is proposed, it is inadequate to enable houses to operate without windows open. QAD has stated that only that obligation is to comply with the requirements of Table 2, which as stated does not include a requirement for cooling. This excerpt from an email to me dated 27th of May 2016 illustrates this position. This email is in response to my request that the ventilation system proposed for our house be upgraded sufficiently to cope with summer overheating. Quote, as for our discussion today, I confirm that the QAD position that system designed by Wintec Mechanical and outlined in the attached documents meets the requirements as per Table 2 in Appendix 13 of Plan Change 35, also attached. I understand your stance, however, QAD is obliged to provide system as it does change 35 and any improvements specifications above and beyond these requirements are not QAD's responsibility. As we have done in another copy in the mid-Norway sector QAD, I am happy to arrange the installation of an upgraded system of provisions the homeowner pays the difference between the system design, the QAD specification and the increased specification, that is to achieve cooling. We have recently had numerous discussions with QAD legal team, RMA advisors and mechanical consultants and confirmed this position and confirmed the QAD is meeting its obligation. However, David is arguing they aren't because it's not mitigating the effect. Further, in response to the following direct question in an email from Scott Freeman at Bryce Street Excellence and Planning Consultant to Kelly Campbell, PhD, QAD, Chief Executive, 12th of September, past month, Scott asked, so can you please confirm by email that in the interim, the QAD will be installing ventilation systems that meet the legal requirements of the Plan Change 35, but most likely will be ineffective in providing a livable internal environment unless the affected landowners pay for an upgraded system. And Kelly says, hello Scott, your email's correct. So, it's clear the QAC will only provide mitigation measures to the extent they are legally required to do so, irrespective of whether these measures provide a livable environment. And David argues they don't. If the ventilation system provided by QAD is adequate to allow a house to be lifted without the windows being open, then they have not fulfilled the obligation to mitigate the airport's effects. Yet they claim to have fulfilled their legal obligations. Therefore, the RMC has to ensure there are clear provisions within it that produce the outcome that was anticipated in Plan Change 35, i.e. that houses within the airport noise boundary be able to remain livable with their doors and windows shut. Because if the RMP does not do this, then it's clear the QAC believes they have no legal obligation to meet that outcome. Once again, if owners have to open their houses because the cooling system provided is inadequate, then the noise caused by the airport has not been controlled or mitigated, and the intent of the plan and the plan change has not been fulfilled. So we request to ensure that houses remain livable in some of their doors and windows closed, that the relevant table within Appendix 13 or some other specification within the designation section must be specific on what should be provided by way of heating and cooling systems. And that table should include specific performance requirements of ventilation systems to ensure the physical outcomes, such as temperature range expectations within houses, are quite clear, as well as the specification of fresh air, and the table should specify those cooling systems be provided sufficient to maintain the critical living environment within each house at a temperature of 18 to 20 degrees in summer months with windows and doors shut. So we have suggested that the following amendments in yellow and underlined may fulfill this obligation. at page 37, line 5, paragraph 16, be amended with the words and cooler. Mechanical ventilation for heating and cooler, which provision contains in chapter 36.6.3. And that's a table which has now been changed, it's now 36.6.3 table. Each house is to be, to additional words, each house is to be provided with a cooler system, which at any time required by the occupant is able to maintain the air temperature of 18 to 20 degrees in critical living environments. This will satisfy my concerns about allaying the effect of a fierce, low summer, western sun that afflicts much of Franklin. One cannot open the window because it least sits comfortably in our houses while planes fly overhead at ever-increasing frequency. The airport has created this situation and must accept responsibility for its remedy.
Right,
no,
that seems very clear. Thank you very much. I don't have any questions or anything. Good, thank you. All right, so Queenstown Airport Corporation. Good afternoon.
You said a copy of it. You have a copy of my pre-logical submission at the end of the window. I don't propose to go over any particular specific points in there, and it was now raised by the CEO this morning, where we were closed and closing. We did that to consider, and a lot more information has been presented today, including
Well, I was hoping that we would be able to have some view from you today in relation to what the CEO's put forward.
And provide us with the point of the case, we might receive on the one hand QAC UNOR and the modification of the decision for the information inadequately addressed six, and you need to have a whole bunch of conditions on the discussion in order to address these six. And then to say, but that you can't do that through the process, that to me is nonsensical and simply can't be correct. And we will take the time to consider the submissions and to consider whether there's anything in them and whether some conditions can be proposed, which addresses concerns, and before we review that. If that might be an appropriate way forward, then we will provide those to you in the closing. No reason why that course of action is inappropriate and why it's not feasible.
You might very well be right, other than for me, trying to get my head into the various issues that have been raised, I've found that dealing with the issues when they crop up is best. If I leave them and come back to them later, what is already hazy just becomes absolutely fogged out. So that's why I was hoping for some kind of contribution from you on the issues that you've heard Mr. Allen raise today. Be that as it may, can we just embark upon the conversation and sort of see where that leads us to? The procedural minute that's been issued around these hearings provides requiring authorities with a right of reply, so I'm not suggesting that we deviate from that. So it's just really my personal preference would be to gain as much help as I can from both of you around the issues that are alive. That's all.
Yes, and to clarify, I'm not suggesting that we touch you as news and both in that regard. I think it might be my sharp ambition to for you to raise the issues through with us that you that you'd like to hear from us on, and we will respond.
Well, let's do that. Let's talk about the issues, at least as I see them at the moment, and let's work on the basis that you're obviously reserving your right to reply, and there may be other issues that you think about other than the points that I want to talk to you about today, but let's progress on that basis. I think the procedural minutes said something or provide something about the right to reply as the exercise. Correct me if I'm wrong, is it within 5 days of the adjourning of this hearing? Right. Okay. Well, I'm working on the basis that I guess I'll have to issue some sort of minute giving a start date for that 5 days. So we're kind of, that's clear enough.
Yes, and just on that, I would be grateful for a little more time than 5 days. Because respond to the various new issues that have been raised today, which is very important, and there's a reason the new legal position is. And also, for my own part, because I have a full hearing scheduled next week as well, for people.
So how much time are we talking about then?
Once you entertain an additional week, so I'm grateful for that, but if not, then an additional couple of days.
Well, the other point, I suppose, that I feel that I should make, and no doubt you'll understand this fully, is that if we're looking at a reply, we're looking at a reply, so I don't want any disadvantage to any submitters where new information comes through the reply, and then I'm faced with the awkward circumstance of saying, well, look, there's something fresh and new here, and out of fairness, we should go back to a submitter and let them have another go at the issue.
Yes, ma'am.
Alright, okay. Well, let's start off with talking about the relevance and the significance of the McElroy decision. You've heard Ms. Allen's submission on the point, and my understanding of it is he's saying, well, there's too much reliance placed on that decision to the effect that really it's look, there's the decision. Irrigrounds airports, call them what you like, they these days in the modern world they cover a plethora of activities, so we really don't need to get into great details and descriptors about what's going to be in and out of the designation is covered for by McElroy. I'm paraphrasing horribly, but that's kind of the thrust of what I took. And he's saying, well, that's not sufficient because that avoids or steps around the need to think about effects that might arise.
My position in response to that is, and as I've stated in my own position to clients and leaders as well, is that the client is to get one fix a day, the motion of that life, and provides the reassurance, it reduces the effects, and it is more than a, strictly in terms of the material which can do in those effects, on the development plan, and basically what we should do, which is about providing the on existing data land, not on research land. So in lot 6, for example, where property conditions were proposed, it's designated that the designation related to new land that was not owned by 286. So assessment was required on that sheet. It was going to hold to new activities. We were not taking it here, we're taking it to provide for a greater range of activities within the existing designation. In terms of the sequence, it's also very relevant to note that the integration of development enabled under the expanded designation with the surrounding environment and development of the adjacent zones, the Markwood Parkland, etc. Well, the lot 6 development in fact provides that integration, that it's a buffer, I guess, between the more intense activities that are supposed to be enabled from the designation and the designation. And the development on lot 6, if that is ultimately approved, that is subject to some fairly detailed conditions about design and outcomes and landscaping and so forth. And so that provides that integration and that sort of transition.
All right, we'll come back to lot 6, but let's just stay with the first point then about, you know, the outline development plan provides some, you know, a way forward in terms of dealing with effects related issues. Now, Ms. Allen made the point that, well, if the designation provides for height limits already, then doesn't that take a lot of the teeth away from an outline development plan device? In that, you know, he made the point that, well, what council would then start to challenge an outline development plan on the basis of matters to do with height limits and setbacks if they were already provided for in the designation? Wouldn't they be stuck?
I understand some work has just been done today. One of my colleagues has looked into recent outline plan processes, and the development that GRC has been seeking approval for under those has been well within the existing submitted envelope, so the number of buildings has been lower than the existing 10-year height limit, and I think that's relevant, and that is, I don't think we can assume that because we are going to be GRC is seeking these standard conditions for development, that it's going to maximise equity, you know, for the maximum.
I understand that point, but if we just stay with the first point, that if the maximum heights are included, even though development may not occur to them, when an outline development plan is under consideration, do you agree with me that a council considering the outline development plan would somehow be constrained to challenge issues around height?
Well, I think it would be difficult for us to challenge the actual height of the building,
right,
but it could specially impose conditions that address the effects arising from that. And to that extent,
let's just be clear there. You're saying that it could address, it could impose or seek to impose on the outline development plan conditions that sought to address the effects of height, even though height were allowed in the designation.
Yes.
Right.
Question. I could do that.
Commissioner, I'm not too familiar with how you want to run this, but this was a matter I was going to talk to you about as well. Now the right time?
Yep, now would be good.
I think there's two things that emerge from this point. I think at the end of the day, the decision making needs to be satisfied that a 15 metre height limit for this designation is appropriate in terms of the effects. And I've got a summary of my evidence to give you next, which might help you put that 15 metre height limit in a bit more context. What I've done is I've taken Mr. Young's table and I've completed it and drawn you a map to show where the various height limits around the Franklin Flats, where they will apply, and I can explain it to you in a summary of evidence. So I think the first step for you is to determine that a 15 metre height limit is an appropriate height limit for the people plan. The second point is how effective, I think the question is, how effective are the outline plan procedures in terms of managing effects? And that's a process I have some considerable experience with, both at the airport here and on behalf of other requiring authorities. The work or the inquiry that Ms. Walt mentioned a minute ago about I ran back to the office to see which recent developments at the airport have been subject to the outline planning processes and what was involved. And it might be helpful for you to understand some of those. There have been a number of recent outline planning processes applied at the airport, and you might have noticed that you flew down on Monday that the terminal has been recently expanded quite considerably. So that expansion project was subject to an outline plan. There were some discussions with the council about the building design, although the council didn't have a contrary view about that design, they were quite happy with it. There were some conditions imposed around primarily the construction process to manage traffic and manage construction norms. That particular building has a height of 7.5 metres, and that's because of the effect of the RLS controls, and that fulfilled the requirement anyway, 7.5 metres. So we weren't having to deal with any issues around building height there. But those measures that were put on the outline plan were accepted by the QAC, and the work was due to complete in accordance with council requirements. Another reasonably large scale project that was completed last year at the airport was a complete resurfacing and widening of the runway. And that work has to occur at night for obvious reasons, and we all night for a number of months. And the council required an outline plan for that work. The outline plan as it was proffered had a range of conditions around the management of temporary plant, i.e. it has to be moved away and got this screen from view during the day. It had a suggested condition around adherence to the New Zealand Standard of Construction Laws, and had set out a process for dealing with public complaints and public engagement, and it also had some suggested conditions around earthworks, primarily dust suppression and foreign objects getting onto the runway, that type of thing. And there was a condition around any replanting of grass that had used bird resistant grass seed, which is conventional airports. The council had some broader concerns about that particular work, and they sought to change some of the conditions with respect to construction laws and impose a greater degree of management around that public engagement process. They also imposed more detailed and I guess more comprehensive conditions around management of dust, silt, sediment
and the earthworks that were going on. Also some further conditions around places with rehabilitation, including repairing damaged roads, removal of plant and satellite surfaces, and they had some additional requirements around management lifestyle, because obviously you could imagine that this thing is like a Christmas tree, and council's concerned about that lifestyle carrying off site. So all of those conditions were added to manage the events, and the airport accepted those and carried out the work in accordance with those conditions inside the timeframe. So I don't know if that's helpful, but that's a couple of examples of the outline planning process in action, managing the effects that emanate from the works that the parts of the works that appear at the Queensland Airport in
particular. Have there been any examples that you're aware of where there's a threshold point already included in the designation, like Mr. Young's talked about, say for example a height limit, and there have been concerns expressed by the council in relation to that height, and this, requiring authorities sort of said that, well look, it's part and parcel of the designation, so it's not really an issue to be grappled with in terms of conditions around effects and that like that. Because these other examples you're given, they aren't quite
on point, aren't they? Yeah, I agree. And the only recent work that's occurred at the airport around buildings having some height related to the control tower exclusion. But currently in the designation is exempt from height controls.
Right.
One reason for another, and you appreciate why. So there was never really any discussion on a situation where a given threshold might be approached, and the shift that you raise it. I'm just trying to think whether there have been other things. Normally the airport, or certainly historically, has tried to operate inside its envelope, and actually there haven't been those challenges.
Yes, I understand that. Well, I guess Mr. Young's point within the context of if we really can't clearly grasp what's proposed in terms of the designation, then it creates the issue that we're discussing. And what's more, it's rather difficult for submitters to understand what's proposed and what possible effects there might be. And he goes on to sort of say, doesn't he, that well, in the absence of detail, how can we be confident that the effects issues that I need to consider in the statutory flow of issues have even been addressed? And the submission is at that point as well, isn't it? It's,
I think it goes a little bit back to the first point I made. The first thing is first, you need to satisfy that 15 metre height limit is appropriate here, and the effects of that are acceptable in the context. And as I say, I take these to that.
Okay. So and does the same apply with the setback issue?
Yeah.
Right. So what you're saying then is, in response to Mr. Young's point, there is sufficient evidence before me to determine height and setback issues in terms of what's wanted in the designation. You can lead me to evidence that shows that there's a sufficient assessment of effects of buildings this high and setback that far from dangerous.
What I will show you is how a 15 metre height limit for airport land fits in the context of Frankton overall. And what I suggest through the evidence is that that's a consistent outcome with the surrounding zoning provisions. So you might see similar character and scale to what is either anticipated or currently being built in the surrounding areas.
And does that approach deal with and provide for the issues like view shafts that Mr. Young was talking about and maps of that sort?
Not in a detailed and specific way, but I think my suggestion to that though is that when you take a look at the surrounding zonings and what is ultimately envisaged in those zones, the airport is going to preserve a large tract of open space being thrown away, of course, because it's as much as you've never missed. And it also has a cross twin runway, which would be familiar. So there will be a degree of openness there, but where it is able to develop land, my opinion is that if you cast your mind up 10, 20 years, there'll be nothing about an airport with 15 metre height limit that looks incongruous in any way with the development that has occurred in Frankton during the course of that time, given what these individual adjoining zones enable.
And are you saying, because it won't be incongruous as well, then that means that the effects on adjoining landowners will be acceptable?
At a general level, yes. The outline plan process is a safeguard that the council has to ensure that those fine grained things, like the matters, it's quite helpful from Mr. Smith this morning. He gave you the Auckland designation, the two designations. One relates to the Auckland Airport, as you know it, the George Bolt Memorial Drive part. And interestingly, that has, if you have a look at it, has a quite similar approach to the one being proposed here by QHC. The second designation relates to the Renton Road area, and I'm not completely familiar with what's going on there, but I understand that relates to the land that's been set aside for the new northern runways, second runways. But the Greenfields situation, I might be wrong about that, I'm sure Mr. Young will tell me if I am, but that's my understanding of what the Renton Road designation was about. And that includes some considerations for outline plan type assessments as conditions. And then you have design and external appearance of building structures.
So what page are we on?
Autumn schema. So the types of things that would be considered at an outline plan phase there relate to design and external appearance of building structures, landscape treatment, land modification. All things I would anticipate the council would naturally consider when dealing with an outline plan here at QHC. I know that because that's what they've done traditionally. Now the difference, I suppose, is that this designation specifies a range of things that the council must consider. They're a bit more detailed than the Act does. And I suggest that's a choice for you as a decision maker. Are you happy to leave the council to responsibly undertake its obligations in terms of setting outline plans under section 176A? Or do you think they need more guidance in the plan, much as the Auckland approach has adopted? Because those things are useful sort of finer grained methods of dealing specifically with the effects of buildings, landscaping, land modification.
I suppose the other additional benefit, of course, of this approach is that submitters, when they looked at the designation, would have been able to see all these things.
Yeah, agree with that.
Undermine the purpose of these designations if we get drawn into and bogged down on like the details of effects of activities that we don't actually know what they're there, because we're so published. Providing opportunities tend to occur.
Sure, but is the Renton Road example, you know, does that provide sufficient flexibility, do you think?
Renton Road example was the Greenfield site, and so that in is much more detail
Well, maybe you could think about that. You know, I'm not sure, you know, I'm the same as you, but George Bolton and Meeson Road, understand them broadly, but I would have thought in a greenfield circumstance, the airport company in Auckland would be wanting to keep quite a level of flexibility.
I had a read of these as Mr. Young's presenting to you, and as I say, the type of considerations I would normally expect council to bring to bear here on a building type outline plan at the airport. That's going to be, in any way, disrespectful. They're very good at considering landscape and visual amenity finances. Seems to be a speciality of the district for very obvious reasons. But my view when I read these was if they ended up in this particular designation, would that be problematic from an equal point of view? I think they are they're quite useful measures.
Well, maybe that's something for you to think about. Can we go back to lot 16? Just so I understand the proposition you're putting forward there, Ms. Falk, before when we were talking about it, you were suggesting that, and again I'm paraphrasing probably much too horribly, but you're really saying, are you, that the lot 6 circumstance, well, that means that that part of the issue or that part of potential development has already been taken care of as a result of the lot 6 case? Is that what you're saying? That
yes, it's a pretty sentence that Young has the issue that's great and that was meant to be transitioned from development to get the lives of that. So, well, we look at it in mind that the lot 6, the underlying zone of that, is activity area 8, the RPZ, which is, and that activity area extends further than the lot 6, And that is its very purpose, is to provide a buffer between people activities and other activities on the usual zone.
Well, primarily for his client.
Primarily for the airport, in fact, well, in some space, it's just presenting that activity is for, but in addition, it's actually covered on all the lots of places. Which limits land uses on that. So there's always going to be this for this part of the airport, which is really the primary, the main part of the airport that's about the
joint. Well, can we just go to the plans? So I just want to make sure I've got my facts right. So I'm looking at plan 31A. There should be a big copy there.
Actually, it might be helpful to have a look at, my hands up now, Mr. Cobb's summary statement, the previous plan from the jet, which is a bit easier to look at. And so appendix A, the colour photograph overlaid with
Got it.
No, we'll miss it.
So
I'll take you through what it shows, but just roughly, the pink in the middle is the airport, the grey blue to the south is Remarkable Park Zone. The area 9 to 18 is activity area 8 of the Remarkable Park Zone. The lot of is in the notebook CNOR area is roughly half of that area running along one kilometre along. The boundary between the airport designation and the activity area 8, and then coming roughly halfway back into the activity area 8, so that's the lot of the CNOR area, so that's the area that we're talking about now, and then beyond that, within the remainder of activity area 8, the grant activity provided and the established within the activity area quite limited. And as I say, the purpose of that activity area is arguably twofold, well, first is the buffer between equal activities and activities within the remarkable park zone. Arguably, it's a team of both parties.
And so, Mr. 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 northern boundary of that 9 to 18 metre area, and we track along, we go into the out towards the lake, what direction is that, about east, west is it? Okay, so there's lot 6 go down that sort of western boundary.
So the exit way, the proposed exit way for the lot 6 runs up, so you can see the crossing runway on the sand, the
yes.
main road crossing, but the exit way is lot 6.
Are finalised, you're saying that then provides a sufficient, if you like, boundary treatment between airport company activities, including the destination and Mr Young's client's land?
Yes. To the extent that that's required.
Now, what about the areas in blue grey that have got 12 to 18 metres, and is that all part of the Remarkables Park as well?
Yes.
So those areas there aren't affected by the lot 6 treatments, are they?
Not, but the IOs, right, the
IOs
are
fixing
those. So they've
taken control of online media. Okay, so those IOs restraints in relation to the cross runway come into play down there?
Yes. As they do on
the Amazon. Oh, yeah, all right. We can come back to that. I just want to go back and just make sure that I understand really what are you telling me in relation to the relevance of the McElroy decision? You know, what's the kind of take-home message you can give me about that in relation to this case? What I've got to decide?
Well, as a fruit that case,
let Mr Young alone and out of it for the moment. I just want to hear from you, if you like, your simple, succinct message about the relevance of that decision for me.
Well, I think the McElroy's is a simple decision as well, and then it shows that what QAC is seeking here, the range of activities that are seeking to be enabled at the airport, is reasonable and highly consistent with what is expected or what is provided on the airport and the airport in New Zealand. And so those conversion activities which QAC has enabled and the other activities, there's nothing unusual about those. And as far as Mr Young suggests that QAC may take a special screening. Yard or a candidate or a department store, and then he has QAC's proposing a condition which should be in the activity that does take place. There's a proposition must be related to the relationship with the international, but he takes on that takes out of context and not the leader for liberation. activities, including the X factor, which we test is going to be, and as I say, and the activities of QRT is being seen as our focus for input, and that's probably the extent of it, really.
Well, so if I think about McElroy and say, well, look, that's a court's view in a different context, giving its opinion about the range of activities that can occur in a modern day airport, particularly an airport of linked with a large city in New Zealand. Right, so that's, it gives me that sort of overview. Mm-hmm. Now, Mr. Young seems to go the next step and say, well, look, there's too much reliance on McElroy. The extent that an assessment of effects of what's here proposed in the designation has kind of just been glossed over. What do you say to that second point?
Well, I don't see that, obviously. I think, and as the pilot just explained, that the EOI does contain an assessment of effects at a human level by comparing what is being thought, what is enabled on land surrounding the airport, and Mr. Carl's evidence of that what is being thought is entirely consistent with what is being the council, well, the QRTs are applying, or sorry, the final say on what ends up in the conditions and on the council's recommendations in that respect. The council can, of course, take that to the environment court, but not able to be the QRT. So it's not a token decision, it's a standard process.
Sure. Well, are you aware of circumstances where councils have taken requiring authorities to be involved?
Well, I haven't looked at that issue, but in any case, it was strictly provided for in the Act, so you know, I was in the past, and my condition is somewhat relevant.
Okay, let's move then to the issue of the OLS, and see if we can clear that up. Can we do that?
Yes, we certainly could clear that up. if I just summarise the issue and the EOR, there's currently an inconsistency in the OLS designation, and that the text of the designation refers to states that the churches, need to point 75 metres high side of the main runway, where the figures which attach to the designation show those churches connecting at 150 metres high side of the main runway. So there's an inconsistency there. Just curious to see if they agreed it through this process. In practice, QRT applies the figures and always has done.
And which figures?
The figures tend to the designation, which shows, sorry, they're largely parachutes in the planning that section of the plan, figures 1 and 2. They show diagram format that the IOS. And in this case, we don't see this trial of those. So in fact, the QAD has always applied these figures for determining, in order to determine who the IODs are and whether or not a particular proposal complies with the IODs.
So that would be using the distance at 150.
One of the items on the
yeah.
So
which figure is correct and why?
Both figures are the same. All the groups are slightly different things, and so the figures are consistent in that they show the start point of these surfaces at a point 150 metres outside of the main runway. So they're consistent in that respect, and as I say, those are what have always been used for the purposes of checking compliance and entertaining whether or not a proposed development or a lot of structured breaches the LDS. But the text of the designation doesn't marry with what the figures show. And then it states, at least in relation to one of the surfaces because it's silent from the other, that the surfaces should be measured at 0.75 metres. So this inconsistency
which
has the potential to give rise to some ambiguity, and that's where the position lies. And as I say, creative approach should always be, because it administers the situation, so we think it's pretty correct, and that's what it looks sufficient for where the choices are. That's what it looks at when it's checking to see whether proposals comply with true services, including its own infrastructure on the board. And so simply feeding through this process to tidy up that inconsistency, and there are no effects from that, because it's because as I say, the figures and rewards apply to UK. So there are no additional restrictions imposed on properties affected by the IODs by making the change sought by the QAC.
Right, so you're saying that the 150 metres is the correct
yes.
number,
yes.
and that is correct because that's the way the airports always apply it?
Yes.
Right, okay. And in terms of effects, which of the two numbers, 150 or 75, has a more restricting effect?
150. And Mr. Carl made that down to the deadline, but that's because they're coming up further from the runway, they're now protruding out over the airport, more so than if they originated from the deadline. Sure, because I appreciate that the IODs are very technical. Are you clear of the purpose and why they're there and what they're being shared?
I just want to pick up some points that I made when I read the submissions, your legal submission some time ago. So these are not necessarily wonderfully coherent points, but just bear with me while I go through them. Your understanding of other airports, do they, here I'm talking about airports of comparable size, I guess, Christchurch, perhaps Auckland, do they still utilise designations as a key tool, or do they have special airport zones?
Auckland needs a zone and a designation, which is the approach QAC is essentially copied here. Christchurch, a zone and a designation.
And why are the airports gone to use zones as a set from using a designation full stop?
The main reason is that sometimes they have land users occupying the airport that want to develop a given activity that might be airport related, but that it's not a work of the requirement authority. So you have that dual ability to get the development underway, whether you're the requirement authority or not. Normally you would expect the zoning requirements the zoning provisions to be quite similar to the designation in terms of use of enabled and performance standards applicable. The exception of Wellington, the east, has its own. Yet part of its runway, particularly its runway in safety area, has a designation, so that part's designated. Because it's a recent work that they have on take, so they use the designation for the rest of the airport is not designated, and they rely on zone.
So zones in the round would provide more flexibility in terms of options, particularly in relation to who's paying for what?
The zone provides more flexibility for more entities to establish activities on the site.
Yeah.
But as Rising has just found, that sometimes the zoning provisions might not be flexible enough to enable airport-related activities to get off the ground. And an example of that is there is some car park development. They have a car parking issue. And they're currently building a car parking building and a transportation hub on that site, and through necessity and lack of land, they needed to go to a certain height that breached their own height control, and they were in a position where they had their resource consumption, which is a relatively difficult process.
Alright, just touching on another point, where we've got a designation that talks about the provides, and is proposed here, that's the activities will be ancillary to or somehow linked. How useful in terms of trying to kind of preclude activities do you consider such an approach to be? You know, like let's say, take an example of a retail activity, and the airport wants to establish a retail activity on its site, and the usual kind of ancillary or related to provision exists in the designation. You know, can the retail activity be stopped?
So we're saying it's quite a difficult provision, a difficult place to administer, because if you look at some other airports even around New Zealand, you walk into Wellington, for example, and there are a range of retail offerings designed to capture the attention of the passing public who just having to sit up on planes. I think one of the safeguards you have here in Queenstown against, you know, this airport turning into a shopping centre is the lack of land. There's a reason the airport sought a designation over Lot 6, for example, because there's land constraint and there isn't a wholesale opportunity within the QAC's land holding, given its operational obligations, to do much else than what might occur in its terminal and on some of the land around that terminal. So I think in the Queenstown context, the provision itself that, that you've mentioned and the land constraint combined to preclude its future shopping centre curing at Frankton. Unless the Ramas from it, which is not a viable alternative under any circumstances.
Approach to the quite a bit of activity type issue. Are you comfortable with his suggestion about how it's to be dealt with?
Didn't you make my submissions on that?
Yeah.
I thought he did my submissions on that.
Well, he's come up with a recipe of words. That's what I'm more focusing on.
Take you to
the camera. I think it was in his original synopsis, isn't it?
I maintain the view that
so you don't accept his view?
No, I didn't.
Or his approach? And the issues around Lot 27, 39 and 31 on Lucas Bay, that's resolved?
It appears to be. He hasn't confirmed that they were voted by QAC, which is that it certainly affects no issues with those engineering measures.
Your attachment A to the original submission, the legal submission, that's just telling me or providing me information with who owns what land. Is that the...
Yes.
All of the cross-hatching that appears on that diagram Is there any significance in that?
Perhaps I'd like to question Mr. Farrell on that, because that's the same as his earlier event.
It's the one land ownership plan, and it's got all the
The cross hatching is all the equal.
It's not. You've done very well if it is all of the front.
I think I will just clear myself, which is why I can say that that is the equal land.
All right, I'll get to think about that. Okay. All right, now I've got some queries on the event center related issue.
Yes,
we can come to that after we've heard from Mr. Kyle on these airport designations.
Yeah, I was actually going to relatively brief supplementary to present in relation to that because I inadvertently missed the council member when.
On the event centre. Alright, let's go to Mr. Kyle next, shall we? And you've got some further, you've got a summation of your evidence, Mr. Kyle, or something else that you want to tell me?
You should have in front of you, because we're having that drawing already, a summation. And I can be quite brief because of the conversation we've already had, I think. But perhaps I could just take you to section 2, which just deals with the issue of purpose. And I just note there that the conditions 1 to 8 really set out the range of activities that are sought to be provided for by the designation. And then at 2.2, I just reflect upon the fact that airports are highly sophisticated, dynamic, etc., and call for a range. Broad range of activities to be provided for. And I think we've canvassed that issue pretty comprehensively already. And you know that the airports also cater at times for a range of industrial or logistical type land uses, and we've seen some of those emerge in Christchurch because some of those activities really feed off people activities. And I think the important point to note is that it is important for airport operators to retain sufficient flexibility to properly enable forward planning and development necessary to respond to changing demands that arise in the market. I've been working for Queensland Airport for 15 years, and it never ceases to surprise me in terms of the changing requirements that emerge because of its key role in the district's economy to provide for tourism. And the ever-changing animation needs that emerge because of that key role and its growth.
Does that dynamic necessarily result in being unable to properly signal so people who have an interest know what's going on?
I think it's quite clear from the notice the range of activities that are proposed to be provided for. And with the recent modification to limit those activities to being solely to airport function, I think that is just a ring fence a little bit. So I don't think there's any particular concern that I've detected from the submissions at least about the types of activities that could occur on the airport land. It's more about the effect it might come out. Having said that, one of the submissions do say it's a very broad range of activities, but I think that that limitation by making those activities and must be ancillary, I think that goes toward assisting that. Tough understanding. The land constraints that we call this compatible. So turning now to building heights and setbacks, which is a matter that I talked to you a lot about this morning. You'll know that there are some suggested height limitations and setback requirements. a number of land use zones are located on the land zone known as Brackley Flats, and a number of these community airports. These zones have generally emanated from a range of rezoning requests over the years, and they anticipate a range of built-form outcomes. Depending on their function and the methods to which it's managed to affect the life and build development. A variety of height, bulk and location requirements apply to buildings in these zones. Some of the key ones are summarised in Table 1, I'll take here in a minute. And the height limits are spatially depicted in Figure 1, which I also refer to in second. And I say that these attachments demonstrate that there are massive height, bulk and location requirements that apply to the land joining. I wonder, sir, if I could give you a bit of a guide as to where around that hill was. Hill was drawn first, if you like. What that attempts to do is just break down the Franklin Flats into its various zonings. And you heard from Mr. Young this morning that for the most part, buildings in this part of the world are either controlled activities or their restricted discretionary activities. That seems to be the scheme of the plan here. So those numbers you have in each of these zonings or subzones, which are shown by the white lines, depict the height limit for buildings as controlled activities. So if we take the area that you were talking to Ms. Walt about, this is activity area 8, directly to the south of the airport. That's one of the remarkable park zones. Activity area 8, buildings up to 9 metres controlled, buildings to the, up to 18 metres restricted discretionary activity. I think it's helpful for you to also know that for the most part, the council's discretion is limited when dealing with applications for, say a building up to 18 metres. Was proposed in activity area 8, the council's discretion is generally limited to matters relating to the effects of the building. And it's also, I think, useful for you to know that there's a rule in the zone relating to applications for restricted discretionary activities where they involve matters of height, which effectively says that any application for a resource consent for the following matters may be considered without the need to obtain a written approval of affected persons and need not be notified. So,
can I have that rule reference?
Yeah, it's rule 12.11.4. It's on page 12-82 of the operative.
So don't need a fixed planning approval from the owner.
No. And the experience I have is that buildings that are erected at or proposed in the remarkable part zone are processed in accordance with that rule.
Mm-hmm.
In general terms. So you can see that the grey area, which is the remarkable part, there are a variety of heights enabled. And of course, much of that land still is not developed. But in the fullness of time, it will be, presumably, and the built scenario in that part of the world will be quite different to what it is now, including buildings up to 21 metres overlooking the Kawarra River.
Now, any of those heights affected by the application of the, whatever it is, the OLB?
OLS, no.
OLS,
no.
They're not.
No.
So even the cross runway, does that not infringe on any of the remarkable's land?
No, not a great deal. A little bit off the end, the southern end, and a little bit either side of that, and a little bit on lot 6. But as you, what happens is the land drops from the runway down to the river, and that assists to ensure that those height limits are generally unaffected by the OLBs.
Yeah, I think this would have some proposals.
And that's at 150?
Yes.
And does the same apply to the other side?
Well, let's go to the north.
The north side, yeah.
The green is the event center land.
Yes.
And you can see that they have a limitation up to 12 metres in height.
Yep, and again, that's just a bit of a second discussion.
Well, they've got a designation.
Okay.
And I think you're hearing about that tomorrow.
Okay.
And the underlying zoning area is rural. The Franklin Case A zone, which is currently being developed, has a height limit of 9 metres. That land is affected by the ORS. Off the end of the crosswind runway because the land is higher. And there's a curve, you notice the crosswind, the OAS diagram curves in that direction. So the aircraft path directly overhead of that land. And the reason they do that is to avoid the hill, which is in line. So when you take off on that runway, you make a sharp right hand turn to avoid the hill.
Okay, so what does 9 metres become after application of the OLS?
It generally remains at 9 metres except for certain locations. And the effect of the OLS on that land, from my memory, is quite limited and only occurs directly under the curved flight path. So by the time you're away from the crosswind runway and over that land, the OAS requirement is high. I'm not going to finish sharing much on that land. So that currently, if you're going through the site, as you can see, they're building quite substantial buildings on that land right now. The only issue they've had in the past with the OAS is that their construction methodologies have been managed to avoid high cranes.
No. All right.
So the land colour was called that? Orange. The land to the east of Franklin Flats A, which is the name of Franklin Flats B, that was all settled by Plan Change 19.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a range of activities provided for it. Provided within it, and a range of height limits that fly. And I think the interesting thing for you to know, you see the block which shares a boundary with the airport land, with a height limit of 10 metres.
Mm-hmm.
That land is essentially dedicated to yard-based industry. So the anticipation in there is that development would provide sort of heavier uses, smaller scale built form, but the dedication of a lot of land to transportation type or processing type activity, which there's deemed to be shortage of in the district.
So it's zoned in that way, so it's you kind of, if you wanted to put something else in there, it'd be a non-compliant activity.
Yes, which probably won't stop them applying to something different, because that's the experience that's occurred on this land already. But that's the anticipated outcome from the sign, at least. And the other area with the 12-metre item is a light industrial area, for one of the better characterise it.
And is the 10 and 12-metre areas, in terms of the level of development, how do they compare with the area shown as industrial? Are they equally well developed?
Oh no. Much of the area within the 12s actually being developed largely with retail, just
satisfy the zone.
Oh, so this is where, just help me orient that. So there's actually a pack and save and
yes.
My team with that. And is the OLS affect the tail end of that 12 metre?
No.
And doesn't affect the 10 metre either?
No.
Right.
There has been one occasion where the OLS has come into play on that side of the runway. And if you look at the existing industrial area that's shown purple and low, there's site right on the edge of the airport landholder. And that was developed for, I think it was a placemaker's school or something. And that building was very slightly constrained in terms of its height. And there were some obligations imposed on the construction of that building around how it was constructed in order to avoid cranage protruding into the owners. The next attachment is a corollary table, if you like, and what that does is it builds off Mr. Young's table, and he gave you some selected examples of height and bulk and location type requirements on land around the airport. What I've done is try to marry this table up with what you see in the drawing that we just talked about, but it also has well, let's just deal with the first page, and I can leave you to read the rest of that yourself. But the first page deals with the remark, park zone, the various activity areas. It deals with the activity status of buildings. You see that control up to a certain height, then discretionary, restricted discretionary to another height. And beyond that, a second height limit they're not going to apply. And I've set out the various height limits that apply to the various activity areas and the relevant setbacks. And you see no setback requirements, but there's a certain matter around the streetscape which requires a minimum setback of 1.5 metres to be provided from the road boundaries and foundation line buildings. And I've done that for all of the zones that surround the airport. If you turn the pages here, I've done it for the rural zone, the industrial zone, the Franklin Flats B zone, which is talked about, Franklin Flats A, and the designation 29, which is Queenstown Events Centre, quite detailed, etc. The low density residential, and the airport mix zone, which is currently encompasses part of the airport.
And how does this relate to Mr. Young's table?
Mr. Young's table. So I'm going to put his submissions like the back on the table. Representation of the range of building heights that will ultimately prevail on the Franklin Flats in time. See, he has given you just activity area A, the rural zone, industrial zone, Franklin Flats B, Franklin Flats A, but not all of the remarkable park zone requirements.
Activity area A, so that's the area that's immediately adjacent, or that's alongside the boundary, isn't it?
Activity area 8.
Eight.
Yes, that's right.
Thank you.
So, I think it's the paragraph 2.8. The suggested alterations to the area going designation promoted by QAC insofar as this result in amendments to the height and setback for building would, in my assessment, result in outcomes which are generally consistent with anticipated short-form outcomes in the suggested designs. Thus, resultant development on the airport land would maintain a character and form which is generally consistent with development on adjoining land. And I just make the point of 2.9 that one of the limiters on the airport land, of course, is the OLS, and that will have some limiting effect on some of the QAC's land. To limit building height to a height below 15 metres.
So, is that the case then, that would be, you'd be below 15 metres wherever you were on airport land?
Not necessarily, no. It's almost trite to say, but the closer you get to the runway, the lower you have to be.
Sure.
And the existing terminal, I don't know the exact figures, but I don't think that can go much higher.
So the existing terminal, going back to your current plan, that's just immediately above the figure 15 metres, isn't it? Am I reading that correctly? Or I got it round the other way.
The existing terminal, you can see the proposed airport mix design.
Yes.
And the arrow that points to
the
terminal there.
Yeah, that's the terminal there.
Yeah, and you see the terminal complex is in the front part of that mode.
And if there were to be developments, that's most likely to occur along lot 6, is it? Is it where this? No.
Lot 6 is intended to accommodate a range of activities which are currently located in, currently located in this corner of the airport land holding here, being helicopters and general aviation activities. Those activities have to be relocated from that enclave to enable the terminal to continue to expand to the south and for additional gates to be provided adjacent to the terminal in a southerly direction. So the general principle behind Lot 6 is to lift Halley's and GA, place those on Lot 6, and focus this land here on terminal and apron development and associated car parking, etc. There's a couple of drivers. And I don't want to give you all of the details, so that doesn't need it, but there's no more room for Halley's and GA to expand, so they're constrained in themselves. The ability to host forecast scheduled aircraft is also becoming highly constrained, hence why the need to push south is an imperative. There's also, because of the growth in scheduled aircraft, there's also a need to run a parallel pathway along here, which would essentially front the Lot 6 land, if you like. So that pathway would exist, the GA and Halley's would operate on that, and scheduled aircraft also use it in order to free up runway space, runway availability for runway space.
So then where would the proposed development envisaged by the modifications of the designation occur?
Primarily in the terminal. So things like further retail offering, that type of thing, primarily in the terminal.
And that's kind of more by sort of an outward expansion of the terminal?
Indeed.
that the vision for the terminal in the fullness of time is to take it almost to the balcony, because that's what will be necessary to accommodate the forecast line.
And which boundary?
Sorry, the southern boundary.
Southern
boundary. So that is a modular building, if you like, and it can be expanded in that direction. I should say, in and around the terminal, you know there are some things like vehicle car operations which are not currently in the terminal, but they're on the airport site. They're likely to certainly be a feature of the future Queenstown Airport, that type of activity, transportation hub, etc. That in preparing the notice, we did look at other regions and the type of height limits that applies, and given that Auckland has been raised, the existing designation in the Manukau plan, there's no height limit for buildings in the airport precinct. I had a quick scan of the document that Mr. Young looked to you this morning. I think there's a height limit there. Again, instead, that airport just relies on the ONS requirements to limit building height. I think we've covered this point. This was the matter I talked to you about and we discussed around the effect of Section 176A and the outline plan process and the experience I had with dealing with those. And
okay.
I think take that. Has been dealt with. 217, I just again address the issue of non-airport related activities and touch upon the whether it's necessary to say that certain activities are prohibited, and suggest to you that that's not necessary given that these activities have to be ancillary to the airport. And certainly that type of limitation is very unusual in most cases. I've never seen that anywhere else in the dissertation. And the next part of the summary deals with the OLS matter. I'm not sure that I've got much in there that adds anything to what Ms. Walters has already said to you. So, unless you have any questions for me on that, we can move on. Over the page, I'll just touch on the evidence that I have given you around designation 29, which is the events centre. I guess the only thing that has arisen since I looked or prepared the summaries made known to me last night that there is actually some evidence on the part of the council with respect to designation 29, which I hadn't seen. I've since read that evidence. It's evidence by Mr. Childs and Jalan Vardy. I had the opportunity to read that last night, and I think the essence of what Mr. Childs is saying is that activities sensitive to aircraft noise at ends are generally inappropriate inside the control boundary, and that's certainly my opinion and court opinion insofar as dealt with that matter by Francis B. Trier. The suggestion that I've had around the creation of ATAMs on that event centre land is to try and limit them, and the limitations I've set out in my evidence. There's nothing about the evidence that I read from the council that changes my view about the need to limit those activities. It would be undesirable to have a wholesale ability to have an ATAM created on that
on that event centre site. The bottom line is that can be avoided because it can be shifted. To bring that type of activity inside the RCB is a generally undesirable thing.
Okay, alright, I'll just come back to that. Now, I just want to return to another point Mr. Young made about the designation two, or I forget this one, but he was critical of your assessment in that you didn't consider the opposite district plan. Do you remember him saying that?
Yes.
And what's your response to that?
I think that should be self-evident from what I've presented to you today. Certainly the process of formulating the notice took into consideration that wasn't arriving at that 15 metre height limit for this designation. The approach was to look at, as we've just done, the likely future transfer flats scenario. See that things are out of sync.
So is this criticism more that in the evidence you prepared, you don't explicitly refer to the operative district plan? Is that
possibly, possibly. I think that's what I read from it. You might say something else about that.
Okay. Let's then go to designation 29, as you've started to. That's the event centre. And these noise sensitive activities. Now, Dr. Charles, I think on page 7 of this paragraph 5.3, this is about the childcare facilities, or isn't he sort of saying, well, look, as long as the facility is built to the required standard in terms of being able to meet the noise level inside the building, there's really no need to limit.
I think he says 2 things. He starts by saying that such locations are generally inappropriate for assets. And then he goes on to suggest that, well, if you render the building sufficiently robust enough, then don't worry about it. I think more caution should be applied than that, because let's take a daycare facility for example. It's unlikely that if you took a child to a daycare of that nature, you would expect that child to be inside all day. And the moment that the child was taken outside for whatever purpose, you're going to expect the size of any high level of quite unpleasant aircraft noise on that site because it was very close to the runway.
But isn't that the same as if you're taking their child to some of the shopping centres in close vicinity vehicles?
I've said that some people might shop for a whole day.
But if we're comparing the periods of time when the child's indoors and outdoors, if the child's here facility with them, the outdoors at the shopping centre.
I guess you have a choice at the shopping centre as opposed to noise of this nature. If your child is in here in that location, and it could be that, you know, it's a great day to go outside.
You'd have a choice, would you, when you put your child in that particular care centre?
I think what I'm suggesting is that people shouldn't be given that choice because often they don't expect the outcome that their life is supposed to. And they begin to complain about it.
So, on that, a couple of days ago, you were in the visual child check facility here, which is quite new, so an outdoor area associated with that facility that the children are free to go out into and come and go from the area. So it's part and parcel of the entire facility. So I think they just don't have to be aware that the room and people, you solve the problem. The children will be outside. But in any case, my expectation of the child is a little bit different. And I actually, my opinion, the way I read him is that he's actually very qualified. He's been very careful in how he frames what he says. And what is paragraph 5.3, he says that standalone daycare and community facilities might be appropriate. It's a building housing indeed which can be designed so as to achieve an appropriate standard. He doesn't go on to elaborate what he means by might. He doesn't say it will be appropriate if you provide that situation, he says it might be appropriate. But in an executive summary, he clarified that this could be the case, that if there is no equivalent site available. And so I think that when you read that carefully, what he's actually saying is that standalone daycare and community facilities, because both are assets, could possibly be appropriate at the event centre, but only if there are no suitable available student sites for those facilities outside the OPD. And my submission, or all the executive that's consistent with what Mr. Kyle has just said, which really, if it can be avoided, it should be for the community base. And in this case, the council hasn't provided any evidence that these types of activities, that present need for these types of activities should be located at the event centre within the OTB. So therefore, it's not charged to use the civil effect for the position of the council's facility. And I also note that the council hasn't undertaken an assessment of those activities in 2021. No assessment as to whether they are reasonably serious or shouldn't be executed. No assessment of sex, no assessment of sexual planning documents. It's really simply, we don't expect that what QAC is the same about them, so therefore we don't have any motion for these things. And in my position, council's case for those as an activity, standalone as an activity that they put in the case would be sufficient. Ethan in, I think, has kicked that by Britain's session six. The other point you know is that QOJ has been a blanket prohibition on it, I think, because it's just been fairly limited by way of and everybody beneath it, the claim, which is a good communication, which is a good thing. And that's a big distraction.
Well, Mr. Charles is presumably coming along tomorrow, but in paragraph 5.3, which is the key, well, I thought was the key paragraph anyway.
I think you need to read 5.3, which is the teacher family is 2.1d. I think 2.1d takes 5.3, but 5.3 is actually not that helpful because he doesn't elaborate on what might be,
so you think the words I do not consider this to be an overriding factor if there are not equivalent sites available.
If there are not equivalent sites.
Yeah. So they're talking about a sort of a 24/7 childcare centre being available somewhere else.
Outside
the OECD. Yeah, outside the OECD.
I'm just not clear as to what you mean by equivalent, but I take it to mean perhaps some proximity and human space and location. And to that extent, I might be in numerous childcare facilities out and that is one solution across that highway. But there's another one in 5 miles, there's another one in Lakehead State, there's another one at Cameron Franklin.
Given that there is a child care facility already on site and it's used, in, if you like, by others who go to the event centre for event centre purposes, you're seriously troubled that if that were extended, there could be reverse exclusivity type complaints.
Yes, I think the QHA submission is something that is a speaking to uphold PG35 because then it's in the community as to what is the appropriate thing. So and it is directly related to the PG35 and court has considered the appropriate thing to approach it previously. And so it's also about limiting the number of people exposed to that noise to as few as possible. And also bearing in mind that the underlying zoning and noise sensitivity are prohibited within that side of the runway.
Her position is she doesn't agree, does she, on the limitation? Is that right, Sammy?
Yes, on the basis of it, and she's like such a sound viewer, all of you here, but it's like, my opinion, it doesn't support you. I wonder, well, but I wonder whether it might be helpful if I hand out these legal submissions, these confidential legal submissions on the 7th, and I can either take them through them or you can read them.
Yep, this is on designation 29.
Yes, it's gone. It's got the charge of units and it's got about reasons.
All right, thank you. Yes, it's in the name of the submission. I can have a read of that, but there's nothing additional that you want to draw my attention to in the submissions?
In respect of Ms. Galvani, in my submission view, it's quite confused. It is quite difficult to follow, so I understand her reasoning and actually where she ends up in her position. She accepts that the use of childcare facilities, for example, must be consistent with the site designated purposes. But that's a very pointed QOD submission, and speaking community activities, such as childcare facilities, that may be limited to facilities for kids who use them. Any community facilities that they can submission to go to the relationary facilities with
the site. So the childcare facility per se, with the linkage gone, you don't think that's in accord with the designation purpose?
No, I don't. And
the designation purpose is pretty broad though, isn't it?
Well, it is pretty broad, but I don't. A standalone childcare facility is a commercial community activity, and I don't think you can read from the purpose of the interaction that it's just like.
But other commercial activities would occur within the event centre. Surely there's commercial activities that occur there.
Or you day.
Don't you have to buy things?
You're a day, although they're run by the event centre, they're not standalone. They're part of childcare facilities, they're not run by separate. There's a coffee stand, which is the purchase of the coffee because you're there, you use the standalone childcare, so it's different, you're going out there, you're trying to. So, and some of the retail that's here at the moment, swimming hogs, some goggles, and they are sold through the reception desk, which we pay for and go to the gym, so they are directly related to the facilities, and also part of the facilities, they're not standing on it. So, what has been thought through this, you know, is quite different in terms of to stand those activities, quite significant, and that's what she actually is, as far as that. And just trying what I say about these standalone facilities is that they may be appropriate, but possibly they possibly could be appropriate, but I really don't demonstrate as we're recently for seeing the objectives of the required society and those and that they satisfy the Section 1 criteria. There's been a lot of achievement by saying by the council and in my
Okay. Okay, then we're left with designation 230 and 576. They were the last ones for the airport company. Yeah, I must say I got somewhat confused about the weather stations in the end, so you'll be able to clear that up for me.
I hope so. Yes, you know from planning map 31A that there are two weather stations shown at Queenstown Airport. Designation 250 shows the old location of the weather station, and it's now located at the position shown as designation 576.
Yes.
So 230 can be removed.
Yep. And I think in your earlier evidence, you said something about confirming that.
Yes.
Who's the need to confirm it?
Ms. Sullivan in my office confirmed it with the Met Service, but there wasn't two.
Right. So 230 is going and 576 is okay?
Yes. And 576 should become 2D.
Okay. So if I say that 2D becomes 576 at the location of 576,
yes.
As shown on map 31A.
That's right.
Alrighty. Okay, are there any more airport related?
I believe that covers everything. Actually,
QHC, what should I record? QHC is no longer pursuing.
Well, I think I see that in my issue raised by Mr. Jerome and his submission, that's all resolved? Yes, so
QAC
has accepted
an
annoyed hearing that there should be a cooling, that requirement of mechanical ventilation is cooled as well as heat. And I just conveyed that to the submission who presented today, and so I feel I have an email out, and I feel I'll provide who was.
Okay, thank you. But in the last letter to the reply, so I'm presumably hearing from Ms. Holden tomorrow, and then I've got some range of other council people covering off, and Mr. Winchester and another legal person from QLDC. Yep. So I'm planning then if all of that goes far, I'll be adjourning at the end of tomorrow. So you want 10 working days or something for a reply or?
Well, it would be,
So if you want to give me a date, I'll work for a date for otherwise. Okay, so we say 5 PM on Wednesday, 7 November.
Thank you.
Well, I think if unless there's anything else, we'll adjourn for the day then.
Thank you.
Right, thank you both very much. That's been very helpful.